Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to The Art of Charm. I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. I'm here with producer Jason DeFilippo. Here at The Art of Charm, we may not have all the answers, but we certainly have some of the questions. And today on Fan Mail Friday, those questions come from you. If this is your first time to The Art of Charm, Fan Mail Friday is a great sample of how we operate at AOC, but by no means a full helping of all our shows have to offer. Listener interaction is one of my favorite parts of the show, and without you, we would have no show. Our typical content is much more in-depth with well-known top performers in their field. We work to unpack their methods, their theories, and their hard-earned insights. These are people you either know or should know, and we use a longer format to help you understand what processes or steps they used, which helped them become successful in the first place. Then, we distill those concepts and help you apply them to your life. For a great place to start, check out some of our most popular episodes at theartofcharm.com, where you can find the best of, as well as our fundamentals toolbox, which includes topics such as reading body language, charismatic nonverbal communication, the science of attraction, negotiation techniques, networking and influence strategies, persuasion tactics, and everything else we teach here at The Art of Charm. We'll send all of this to your inbox if you text CHARMED, that's CHARMED, to 33444, or just go to theartofcharm.com. Or you can grab our iPhone or Android app at theartofcharm.com/iPhone or /Android. And as I mentioned last week, the value episodes are back in the feed. Those are some old school episodes that we did, old school toolbox episodes that we did. Those are back in the toolbox. They got kind of clipped off of our feed, but they are back in there. And those are some of our most popular episodes ever. So go check those out. Those are back in the toolbox at theartofcharm.com/toolbox. All right, let's cut to it.
Dear Jordan, I've been a fan of your show for a while now, and I've never reached out. I guess I figured you never needed reinforcement from a random fan, but now it's me who needs some reinforcement. I'm a student at university, and I've been having a hard time working full-time, studying full-time, and taking care of my sick father. My dad really needs my attention a lot of the time, and we cannot afford home care, let alone tuition for school and books. So I'm torn. On the one hand, I need to take care of my father, even though he hates it, because he knows that I'm sacrificing my schooling and future career by doing so. That said, when I'm away from him, it's nearly unbearable, and I can only do so while in class or at work. I feel too guilty to go out and have any fun or date anyone. Last time I went out with friends, after a few minutes, I felt so bad I left early and ended up crying in my car on the way home. I know I sound like a crazy person, but it's just an overwhelming feeling of stress and dread at the same time, and it seems like that's become my default. So obviously I've stopped hanging out with friends after class or work, which is fine. I'm okay with that, and it doesn't leave me wanting. I guess what I need to ask is, should I drop out of school and take care of my father for as long as it takes and then go back? Neither me nor my father want to postpone my career, especially because the sad truth is that my father isn't going to make it, and likely only has a few months left or maybe another year or so at most. The stress of doing all this is killing me, and it's becoming increasingly harder to work and pay for tuition, care for my dad, and attend classes during the same hours of the day where I often have to work. You're the best person I know when it comes to work ethics and time management. Any advice? Rochelle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, really tough and simultaneously super heartbreaking. So, Rochelle, talk to the school. They can slash should be able to either give you a loan, a grant, I would say, or at the very least help you out so that you can attend fewer classes while maintaining your status as a student, or get some sort of flexibility on when you do the work. A lot of professors might be able to help you individually, too, if the school office won't be able to do that. I don't know why. I mean, I think a lot of professors, look, this is not nearly the same thing, but when I got mono, the school was kind of like, oh, you can drop as many classes and go down to part-time and blah, blah, blah. And instead, I just went to professors and said, hey, look, I got mono. And some of my professors were really cool. And they said, look, if I can give you a bunch of stuff and work and you can go and study it, then if you can pass, I'll just give you that grade. And if you do poorly, then you can retake the class. You don't have to show up to these lectures. You just have to show up to these labs. And that was a huge, huge help for me. So a lot of professors will see it differently, and they can kind of do that thing where it's like, well, if nobody finds out, we can do it this way. So try to ask about that. And perhaps you can take some of the courses maybe online. Back then, for me, that wasn't an option, but you can do them from home, even while taking care of your dad. Do the same thing with work. If you're a server at a restaurant, that's one thing. But if you've got a job that offers even the slightest chance of working remotely from home, do it. I don't think you should postpone your school and career unless you have to, especially because this is going to make your dad feel guilty and build resentment in your camp on your side of this whole thing. And I admire your drive and your work ethic, Rochelle. And we cut out a big section of this letter where she said she couldn't really even afford her books because she's also helping take care of her dad. So, Rochelle, I am going to help you out with your books as well. I know those are super expensive, so I want you to worry about one less thing. So that those are your books this semester are going to be on AOC. And I really admire your dedication, and I really feel bad that you're in this situation, and I really admire what you're doing. So you're growing up really fast, and in a way that's not totally fair. So kudos to you on that, and I'm sorry that you're in this situation. All right, Jason, next up.
I've been listening to you guys for some time now, and I really enjoy it for the most part. And I get that this show is mainly dedicated at guys, but a lot of things you say are so cringy at times. For the speed dating episode, I didn't appreciate you guys supporting quote-unquote yellow fever. As an Asian female who has had awful experiences with men who claim to have yellow fever, it's definitely not cool to condone this kind of language. Have a bit more of a reason other than trying to be PC. Maybe a quick aside of why yellow fever is offensive? It's 2017. Try to be a little bit more woke. Signed, Shanice.
Hey, Shanice, I totally agree with you. Actually, I looked back at this and I recorded that in April of 2013. So the danger of podcasting format is something current to you is half a decade old in reality. And that said, I'm getting married to an Asian girl. Jenny is Taiwanese. So I did put my money where my mouth is, if that counts for anything. Maybe in 3 years, when you catch up to current episodes, you'll find us more palatable. But you're right. Yellow fever. I don't know what the context was. And I assume that just means that I found Asian women attractive. And I'm not really going to apologize for that. I don't think it's racist, but I do think that it's very cringy when there are some guys who like only date Asian girls, or like they like anime, so they want an Asian girlfriend. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. There's a lot of that. There is a lot of that sort of weird fetishizing stuff where you're not quite a human female. You're just like an item that they can put in their creepy menagerie of video game paraphernalia. So I totally get you, Shanice. I'm woke now, though, right? We all woke. All right, Jason, next up.
Hey guys, a few weeks back, y'all talked about following up with a buddy who lost a loved one about 6 weeks after the funeral, because that's when their support starts to dwindle off. A friend of mine was the victim of domestic abuse. She has since left the state and is moving towards a healthier life. We weren't very close, but every time we hung out, usually in a group, our interactions were always wonderful. She was present and uplifting and just fun to be around. I want to tell her this in 6 weeks, so she knows she is a person who is missed and a person of value. My concern is that in doing so, I will bring up the trauma she has suffered, possibly bringing her back into this unhealthy season. So, should I shoot her a text in a few weeks to remind her how awesome she is? I don't intend on bringing up what happened to her, just that she's an awesome person and that all of our interactions were wonderful. Thanks for the advice, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy. You sound like a sweet guy. I'll say the 6 week rule was because that's when support tapers. So in other words, people who aren't caught up on this, the reason we suggested 6 weeks when you're supporting somebody who's lost a family member or a friend, you know, passed away, something like that, is because everyone's so concerned right after the fact. And for the month after, everyone's bringing over food and being all caring and everything. But then 6 weeks later, you still feel terrible because your parent, cousin, friend, whatever, passed away, and everyone else has kind of moved on. So that's what we were talking about in what he's referring to here in his letter. I would say you can send that text anytime and it's fine. I think you're overthinking it a little. Early support for somebody who's moved is great as well. Just make sure there's no alternate kind of agenda thing going on here. And I'm not accusing you of this, Jeremy. I'm just saying a lot of times when men text women like, oh, we miss you, it's like, oh, I'm still single. I don't know. I'm not getting that vibe from this letter at all. I'm just saying you could also just write her on Facebook and say, hey, I'm sitting here with these other mutual friends and we were talking about how we miss you. We hope your adjustment is going well. Here's a photo of all of us acting goofy. It doesn't have to be super personal from you particularly. It can be from your whole crew. That might even mean more to her. And yeah, I don't think it's going to remind her of negative things. I think it's going to remind her of the positive things that happened to her while she lived in that past area. And that's just as important in terms of her long-term memory, all the good as well as the bad, that is why she moved in the first place. Hope that makes sense.
Johnny, we know if you listen to the show, you are driven. In fact, we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey.
We have hired a lot of team members over the last 17 years. Going through endless resumes, well, that's a time sink. But you know what else is a time sink? Interviewing endless people, because they're all going to give you the best face forward.
That's why we love Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets.
Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast.
And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/charm. Just go to Indeed.com/charm right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/charm. Terms and conditions apply.
Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. Next up, Jason.
Dear Jordan, I'm abroad for work right now, and I want to take advantage of the chance to learn the language and get to know the culture. After work, most of my colleagues are tired and just eat, go out for a drink, or go home to sleep. They aren't even trying to put down roots here, which seems like a wasted opportunity to me. I know you've learned languages and lived abroad for many years in many different countries. I think I'm doing a good job of going out on my own and trying to make friends, etc., but I find myself tuning out when I hear them talking in their native language, which is Chinese. Why am I doing this, and how can I break the habit? Thanks, stranger in a strange land.
Hey, stranger in a strange land. This is something that took me forever to learn, and I still sort of learn it the hard way. When living abroad, you make a choice whether or not you're going to listen to the language and try to understand the language around you within the first second or less when people start talking. This is a subconscious choice. It took me a long time to become aware of my habits when it came to this. So either you tune out immediately or you start to listen. And the best language learners make the choice to listen and understand more often than those who just choose to tune out because they're tired or because they don't understand or because they just moved there and they're taking lessons and they're not caught up yet. Listening to understand is really, really tiring. So this is probably just our brain trying to economize energy use. It's probably an actual survival habit, you know, just, I'm not going to pay attention to this. Being mindful of this and focusing on what people are saying is hugely important. It's also really tiring, like I said. So expect to hit a wall at some point during the time that you're doing this, maybe even after just a few hours. Try to push through and note down words you don't know. And you can look those words up on your phone, or you can ask people what they mean if it's appropriate, if you're actually in the conversation, or they know you're listening to the conversation. Eventually, there will be fewer and fewer of those words that you don't know as your fluency increases. And this is a tough process, but it's hugely rewarding. And when I was in Germany, I lived in the former East Germany, and I would go to classes. You know, I was an exchange student in high school. So I'd be sitting in, say, chemistry class, and I had one of those digital translators that a friend gave me. This turned out to be the single most amazing thing ever. And you don't need them now because you have a phone and a great dictionary and it's faster. But you can use those electronic translators or your phone dictionary. I was using this thing in Germany all day in class. Electronics, obviously not allowed in German public high school, but they let me have this. I looked up words all day, and I looked up the same words dozens and dozens and dozens of times sometimes, especially when we're talking about things like chemistry, you know, carbon, oxygen, hydrogen. I know all those things in German because I just kept looking them up. You can look them up all day, and eventually you'll start to understand which words are which, and you start to fill in the blanks. And this is a really tiring process. But along with listening, looking up words that you don't know is a key to fluency. And eventually you're going to start dreaming in languages, and that's when it's going to start really getting trippy, because you're going to wake up when you don't know the word that comes next. And people who've lived in other countries and are fluent in languages that they probably learned as an adult have experienced this very, very weird phenomenon. I would be sleeping in Germany. It would be 2:30, 3 a.m. or whatever. And I'd wake up because I'd be having a dream where I'm speaking or listening in German and I know what all the words mean. And then suddenly it's like, wait a minute, how do I say refrigerator or something like that? Obviously, it wouldn't be a basic word like that, but how do I say that? And I'd wake up and go, oh, I'm in a dream. And I'd have a part lucid dream and I'd wake up and go, I need to look that up. And so I would look it up and I'd go immediately back to sleep. And I even journaled about this, and I started writing things all in English in the beginning, and then I started writing things in English and then German, and then eventually towards the end I would write everything in German with a few English words here and there, and the end of my journal, which I still have, is just all in German. So this is a really cool experience that I also encourage you to do, because it gives you an example of how fluent you are becoming and how many words you don't know when you start to write in that language, especially after you start to dream in that language. And I know I'm putting the cart before the horse here because you're just trying to learn and listen, but I'm telling you, look up words you don't know. Make that active choice to pay attention to everything that people are saying right off the bat. Don't tune out. That's a huge mistake that I've made a million times and that I think a lot of people living abroad make a lot of the time. They tune out because they don't understand, and that basically ensures that you will never get it. All right, next up.
Hey, Jordan, I recently found your podcast and have been hooked ever since. You guys give incredible advice and offer a great point of view. I'm an engineer and a 30-year-old shy introvert. I was in a very unhealthy relationship for 7 years. I cut all ties 2 years ago and have been struggling to move on ever since. I just can't get out of my head anymore and have had absolutely no dates or luck with women since that relationship. I work incredibly long hours, and unfortunately 90% of my life is tied up with work. Then an opportunity showed up. I met a girl volunteering in Thailand last year. Let's call her Jane. Jane is from Philadelphia, and we sporadically text each other from time to time. A few months ago, she asked if I would like to go to Iceland with her. I said, hell yeah! And now we have a 10-day trip to Iceland planned in June.
Uh-oh. Continue.
I'm a nice and easygoing guy, and I don't want to fall into the friend zone category. Yeah. She's 6 years older than me, and to be honest, and sad to say, I have no idea how to banter and flirt with women that are as mature and put together as Jane. She's fun and adventurous, and obviously she feels the same about me. But sometimes I get shy and awkward and pretty much become a mute. I'm not trying to be outcome dependent, and I know I should just have fun. My question is, how can I avoid the friend zone and build attraction without royally effing up this trip? Also, I'm meeting her in Philly, and we're flying out to Iceland from there. I'm going a few days earlier to see some old friends of mine. Should I invite her out to see my friends? I haven't really seen her since Thailand. Should I stay with her or with my friends and then just head to her place the night before we fly out to Iceland? Not really sure how to appropriately handle this situation. Thanks, the Iceman.
Okay, so there's so much going on here, but I'm going to try to break this down a little bit.
Break it down.
Yes, break it down. The problem here is that you say you're not trying to be outcome dependent, but you're basically, this whole letter is one big outcome dependent letter. And what outcome dependency is you going into an interaction or relationship with a specific result in mind, which is almost always not good, because the agenda, if it doesn't match her agenda, is going to result in something that's not comfortable. Look, cold, blunt truth here, Iceman. Women who haven't hooked up with a guy usually, and I put this in parentheses, usually, don't ask them on a long backpacking trip just to test the waters of romance. She asked you because you guys clicked and she enjoys your company. You say you don't want to get in the friend zone. You are already in the friend zone. That's why you're her travel buddy. You're likely going to make this really icky, and that's a very carefully chosen word here. You're going to make this icky if you try to get romantic with her in the middle of a trip. This is going to the idea of covert contracts here. If she thinks you're just friends and you think, I'm going to make it with this gal, you're switching up the agreement in the middle of the trip. It's going to ruin it. If she thinks you're going as friends and you're adventurous and you're this nice guy that's going to be fun to travel with, and you're like, I'm going to get it in, you're going to blow the trip and she's going to be super pissed off and disappointed. And you're going to get angry about it because you're thinking this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And then she's going to go, wait a second. I just thought we were friends. You've got a covert contract in your head that she secretly likes you. And I'm not so sure about that. Don't switch up the agreement in the middle of the trip. You will ruin the trip. My question is, why do you have to have her? I mean, she sounds great and everything, but why not just enjoy the trip? You're going to a place with tons of women that are gorgeous, by the way. Iceland, you know, shout out to Iceland. And you're going to have a wing woman built right into your trip. You're going to have a friend of yours who thinks you're a great person who's going to talk you up and make it much easier for you to approach different groups of people because you're not going to seem like a skeezy tourist who's out just to get it in because you're coming with a female friend. This is an amazing opportunity. Look, I'm not saying it'll never happen, and I'm not even saying for sure that she's not into you. For all I know, you're going to send me crazy emails after your trip, and I'm happy to read those. I'm happy to be wrong here. But what I am saying is that the odds are better than not that this goes up in flames in a major way if you try to make a move in the middle of a camping trip on a glacier in the middle of Iceland. So my question to you, man, is why risk it? That's all I got. Keep me posted. Jason, what's next?
We got some feedback, Jordan.
All right. I'm all ears.
Please refrain from using the word lifestyle when referring to anyone who is non-heterosexual. I understand you were just trying to convey differences in gay or straight, so it's okay to just say gay or straight. Lifestyle is a term our parents used, and it insinuates that straight people have actual lives and the LGBTQ community do not have lives. We have a less than lifestyle. Or a different life. I'm gay and I promise you we lead very similar lives. And more so than a straight girl, because you and I both go home to women, we care about our health, the people around us, and we take ownership of our lives. That's a lifestyle. Boning the same sex does not a lifestyle make. Signed, Laura.
Laura, I love this. First of all, you're so right. Lifestyle sounds some like kind of a creepy label that's used in Eyes Wide Shut or something like that. That had not occurred to me at all. It definitely sounds a little creepy. I don't know. There's something about it reading it right now that's like, ugh, did I say that? So yeah, I totally get that. I think you're right. Lifestyle does sound like something that older folks say when they're referring to a set of choices they don't quite agree with, you know, and so I definitely get that. I will not do that anymore. You're totally right. Thanks for the feedback. All right. Last but not least, Jason.
Jordan, where do you stand on internet security issues? Seems timely with the new FCC ruling, etc.
Jason, can you talk about the FCC ruling just real briefly about the whole like net neutrality, just in a nutshell?
There are a lot of things that have been coming out recently. The new FCC ruling, there are a couple of them. You've got the side of net neutrality, which is not what he's really talking about here. What he's talking about is the fact that ISPs will be allowed to sell your internet browsing history.
Oh, yeah.
That's the real big issue, that because there was a law that was going to go into place, and then they have shot down that law that's going to go into place. So soon, ISPs will be able to sell everything that you've looked at online. And that's really the issue here. You can get around this with a couple things we'll talk about in a second, for sure.
All right. So, yeah, I appreciate that. I read Glenn Greenwald's book on Snowden. It's called No Place to Hide. It was interesting. I watched Citizen 4, which is a documentary about Edward Snowden, which was made with him during the whole thing while he's trying to divulge all this stuff to journalists. And it was pretty spooky. And I've been in the social engineer and info security space, the hacker space, if you will, for a long, long time. Less so now, of course. But there's a lot of things that I look at. I pay attention to these issues generally. And in the past, and actually even currently, I do phone coaching with people and consulting here and there. And there was a client that had to send me a secure Android phone to do the calls. And I thought that was really interesting. This I thought was a paranoid thing. I really thought this guy was maybe self-important or a little bit Looney Tunes, but we used this phone that had a silent phone app built into it and all kinds of secure OS built into it. And what was really interesting and strange was we had to say this code. And Jason, have you seen this? You have to say, like, you get a code word before the call connects, and it's like, your code word is banana hammock or something like that. And then it's like, ask the other party on the line if they have the same code word so that there's no hacker man in the middle attack going on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, do you have the code word banana hammock? And he's like, yeah. And always the code word matched. But other times we would see this intrusion on the call, and it would disconnect us suddenly with no warning, and it would say, your call has been disconnected due to an intrusion between secure call points. And I thought, what? This app sucks. This phone sucks. It's always doing this. Obviously, no one's listening. But the thing was, he was in Burma, right? And he was working in Burma in business. And some of the people he was competing against for business were military, government officials. He hired government officials to help protect him. And they would say things like, hey, I've seen your name in files. There's people following you. I mean, super creepy stuff like that. And this guy wasn't a drug dealer or an arms dealer. He was in a telecom business. And so this app, Silent Phone, kept registering intrusions. So yeah, it's time to be careful. It's time to be a little paranoid. Regardless, if you think you've got nothing to hide from the government, criminals are always looking to steal your info and steal your identity. So why make things easier on them? Let them move on to easier targets. It's really easy to protect yourself, especially now with things like VPN, virtual private networks, being so easy to set up on both your phone and your laptop. In fact, and we'll link to this in the show notes, if you go to theartofcharm.com/VPN, VPN virtual private network, basically what this does is it connects to a quote-unquote secure server. And so if you're in a Starbucks running credit cards for your business or checking your email, all that stuff is sent in plain text so people can intercept what you've got. They can get your logins, and there's plenty of people doing this as a job, stealing information, getting into your bank accounts. Very, very common and much easier than you think. So if you get a VPN, it helps you connect directly to another server, which encrypts end-to-end the data connections. And super, super helpful in private. It's not going to keep out a very sophisticated actor, but what it will do is have the average cafe Wi-Fi sniffer or identity thief just move on to the next person who's not securing their computer. And Jason, you've got a VPN always, right?
Always. Yeah, I prefer private internet access. It's a VPN that's a little bit more complicated to install. But out of all my research, this is one of the only ones that's ever been proven in federal court to be what they call a no-log VPN. So you connect from your machine to their servers, and then you access the internet from their servers, but they don't keep a record of what you're accessing. This will get around your original concern about the new FCC ruling about your ISP selling your browser history, because they will never be able to see it.
Ah.
So this is kind of it tunnels you through another server. But like I said, this is the only one that the FBI has actually subpoenaed. And they came back and said, this is all we got. We can tell you where he connected from, and that's it. So we can't show you where he went, if he was going on the dark web or just going to Pornhub, like, you know, the average
like everybody
Joe.
Else. Yeah, exactly.
And one other thing I'd like to mention is always keep regular on-site and off-site backups. Because if you want to talk about security stuff, we talk about this stuff ad nauseum on my other podcast, Grumpy Old Geeks, every week. But ransomware is huge right now. And that's one of the biggest problems that most people are going to run into if you run a PC. Not so much on a Mac. But regular backups are the only way to get your data back. Because almost, you know, over 75% of people who even just pay up and pay the ransom after your hard drive has been encrypted don't get their data back. There are ways that you can decrypt that stuff nowadays for like the more non-sophisticated types of ransomware, but the latest batch that are out there, you cannot decrypt them. You cannot get your data back. And the only way to do it is have a backup. So definitely backup, backup, backup.
So ransomware is essentially you click on something or somebody sends something to your computer and it encrypts your hard drive. And in order to even be able to access your own computer, you've got to wire them $300 or $700. And then supposedly they're going to send you the encryption password, but they don't give a crap about you. So they just don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually Bitcoin. So you have to figure out how to get Bitcoin, send them the Bitcoin. And then almost always now they will not send you the decryption key, because a lot of this stuff is what they're doing now. It's called ransomware as a service. So you can sign up for $175 and get your own ransomware variant. And it has a dashboard like WordPress, and it shows you how much you've made, how many computers you've infected, and all that. It's insane what these hackers are doing nowadays.
Yeah, I read about this. There's a lot of it comes out of Russia. They're not going to catch these people, and they're not doing much to stop them. I mean, there's government computers and police departments that are getting ransomware. I didn't even think about that being a thing. I was just thinking more of identity theft. And I know we're not a technical show, but this is one of those things where when I see people running credit cards and they're at Starbucks somewhere in Silicon Valley, and it's like, you know that anybody in here could just run a program, sit down and watch YouTube and run it in the background, and they're just sniffing everybody's email passwords, which they're then using to reset your banking information and grabbing, you know, your account money, wiring it out. I mean, this is so common. You don't read about it a lot because it's happening so much that it doesn't really matter. So get a VPN, for God's sake. And we'll link to those two VPNs in the show notes. They're really cheap. I mean, I think it's like, it's just sub $100 a year or something.
Yeah, it's like less than the coffee you just bought per month. It's really cheap.
Certainly cheaper than ransomware, and certainly cheaper than losing your debit information or your identity and having to fix that. All right. Hope you all enjoyed that. Don't forget, you can email us at friday@theartofcharm.com to get your questions answered on the air. A link to the show notes for this episode can be found at theartofcharm.com/FMF112. I'd love to hear from you. I'm on Twitter @TheArtOfCharm. It's a great way to engage with the show. And Jason, you're on Twitter, and tell us about your show again.
I'm on Twitter @JPDef. And yeah, my show is called Grumpy Old Geeks. We come out every Monday and we talk about the security side of things every week. So if you want to learn more, if that's interesting to you, we dedicate a portion of the show every week to help keep you safe. We're on the Podcast One app, iTunes, or go to gog.show to find out more.
All right. Also, don't forget about the Art of Charm Challenge. Text CHARMED, that's CHARMED, to 33444, or go to theartofcharm.com/challenge. We'll take you step by step through making better personal and professional connections, becoming a better networker, so to speak, increasing your personal social capital and your charisma, and it's for both guys and gals, so check that out. Oh, and it's free. A lot of people think it's going to cost money, so they don't sign up. No, it's free. That's the whole point. Text the word CHARMED, CHARMED, to 33444, or go to theartofcharm.com/challenge. Shout out to David Tellis. He felt panicked about his exams, heard the imposter syndrome episode, took a chill pill, and because of that, he crushed it. Thanks for letting us know, David. I'm glad to be of service. And to the LA Kings hockey team, who listens to the show on the bus sometimes and in the air between games. Thanks, guys. That's pretty awesome. Are you in a strange land listening to my familiar voice? If so, hit me up and I'll shout you out. More from AOC at theartofcharm.com, including info on our live residential boot camps. We run those every week here in LA. If you really want to dig into this stuff and work on your AOC skills with us as your coaches, check us out, theartofcharm.com/bootcamp. Now stay charming, get out there and connect, and leave everyone better than you found them.